Gotcha.
Got your green light now. So, okay, 1 Corinthians 7. Okay, this is the main topic that, or the first of four topics that people in Corinth asked Paul about. And it was about the difficulties of marriage troubles. When one party gets saved and the other party don't want to hear it, what do you do? What's the pattern? What are you supposed to do? Is a person's life, you know, kind of put on hold? Is this person supposed to be second, third, fourth, sixth class all the way through? And so that's what he's answering these questions in 1 Corinthians 7. There were two groups of people that made this a big deal, meaning that they didn't have any mercy or very little mercy, and they used this topic to feignly elevate themselves into superiority, and that would be Pharisees and then carnal Christians. Okay, that's the two that this topic was revealed to. And so the Lord wants us to have the right attitude about this topic. We got down to verse 15 last time. That's the goal. The goal of any person, any family, any marriage, is the goal is that God has called us to peace. Okay, so peace and security in the home. That's the goal. That's the desire. That's God's intent of it. That two good friends, two best friends, become husband and wife, and they live out their lives trying to serve the Lord and living in peace. Okay, that's the goal. Unfortunately, that's not the usual thing that happens, the struggles, the trouble, and everything. So we got down to verse 16 now, new ground. We're on new ground, and he's from here down to verse 24, Paul is going to give two illustrations about things in life, and one is the race of a person, okay, circumcision, uncircumcision, Jew or Gentile, and then he's going to talk about your employment, okay, where you choose to work as an employee, as a servant. Some of this can be brought into a position of standing in your governing structures, okay, and so person has to know some of the laws of our country. We have to know the background of our country and how our country is. A lot of people talk about rendering unto Caesar the things that are Caesar. That is really not something that applies to us in regards to the Jewish situation versus our situation. Okay, a person has to understand some of the legal issues, which we might get into. I don't want to delve into it too much. I had a young man just call me today. He's a pastor out in California. He's asking about a legal issue of church structures. And so it is an issue that a person has to deal with. Verse 16, he says, "For what knowest thou, O wife, whether thou shalt save thy husband, or how knowest thou, O man, whether thou shalt save thy wife?" Obviously, in a very common question or a common way of putting that, obviously we know nobody saves anybody. But sometimes the new convert will say, "Well, I saved so-and-so," meaning that that person came to Christ through them, and we understand what they're saying. And Paul did say in chapter 4 that he became their spiritual father. He said, "I've begotten you in the gospel." So in a way, it's okay to say that. And so in this context, verse 16, he's telling If the unsaved party is willing to keep going forward with the marriage, maybe the saved party can be a good example and maybe could lead them to Christ. So that's by the two questions. Okay, Ruckman tells a story about a young lady that married a guy that was a jerk. And this guy and an old guy were drinking, gambling late at night. It's like 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning. And they got talking, and the one old guy said, "Man, I'd just love to have a cup of coffee right now." And the young fella said, "Come to my house. My wife would get up and make it." He said, no woman's going to get up at 1 or 2 in the morning and make a cup of coffee. And he said, "My wife will." He said, "Why would she do that?" She said, "She's one of them Christian ladies. It kind of drives me nuts sometimes. Sometimes I think I'm going to go crazy. But yeah, that's what she'll do. And he said, well, I just got to come home and see this. So the old guy went to his house, 2 a.m, and the young guy makes a big noise, big, you know, racket, wakes her up and said, woman, get us some coffee. This man, my friend, wants some coffee. So she gets up, makes him a cup of coffee and sets it on the table, no complaints, no nothing. And the old guy says, you are crazy to treat somebody like that. He said, yeah, sometimes she just drives me nuts. Sometimes I think about it, you know, and all that stuff. He said, well, watch this. And so he kicked the cup over and fell on the floor. And he said, woman, get back in here and clean this thing up. And she came in, no complaints, cleaned it up, put another cup back on the table. And the old guy says, wow, never seen anything like that before in my life. So what are you going to do with that? And the old guy, the young guy said, I don't know what I'm going to do with it. He said, I don't know, maybe I ought to get saved. And the old guy called the young wife back in. He said, I got to ask you a question. I mean, this, your husband is obviously a jerk, and I don't know why you stay with him, but why would you stay with a guy like this? And she said, because I love him. He said, really? Yeah, I love him. And I know he's going to die and go to hell if he don't get saved. He's going to die and go to hell. He's going to suffer for all eternity, so I just took it upon myself to try to make his life comfortable before he dies and goes to hell. Walked out. And the old guy said, I don't know about you, but that's kind of crazy. And he said, yeah, I probably ought to get saved. Well, I think he eventually got saved. Okay, but that's kind of an example of this passage. Okay. Okay, and some people will do that, unsaved people will do that, unsaved people will do that on a job where they will do things purposely to test you to see your reaction. And they do it on purpose. And if we react properly, it'll just drive them nuts. It'll bother them, bring them under conviction. That's where in Romans 14 it says, if it be possible, live peaceably with all men. Okay, if it be possible. And so, obviously, they're going to probably catch us off guard sometime, and maybe we won't react right, but still, that's the idea of those two questions. Verse 17, he said, but as God hath distributed to every man, distributed what? Romans 12:3, grace. Distributed grace. As God hath distributed to every man. Okay, this is not grace of salvation. It's a daily dispensing of grace called a measure of faith in Romans 12, verse 3. For I say, through the grace given unto me. Okay, so for as God hath distributed every man, as the Lord hath called everyone, so let him walk. So we're called to salvation by grace, so then we walk by grace. And then he says, and so ordained I in all churches. So now he's going to take an analogy of life. Okay, so he's going to sidetrack from the husband-wife relationship. And then he says this, if any man called being circumcised, so obviously a Jew, let him not become uncircumcised. Well, how do you do that physically? Can't do that physically. So he's obviously talking spiritually. Let him not become uncircumcised. In other words, if he's a Jew, don't act like a Gentile. Okay, just be yourself. If any called in uncircumcision, let him not be circumcised. In other words, if you're a Gentile, don't pretend you're a Jew. I mean, a lot of them doing that nowadays. Most so-called Messianic Jews are nothing but Gentiles pretending to be Jews. Okay, and then the idea of being called, if you would try Revelation 17:14 so we can sort of kind of get a definition of that idea, Revelation 17:14. A calling is a calling is like a service or a vocation or a ministry that you have in life, but a calling also refers to being called in the matters of salvation, where the Spirit of God is drawing the man. Revelation 17:14. These shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them, for he is the Lord of lords and King of kings. And they that are with him are One called and chosen and faithful. Called, chosen, faithful. Okay, in an Alaskan version is cold, frozen, faithful. Okay, that's how they would get it up there. Okay, so called, chosen, faithful. So you're called, that in this context would be salvation, chosen to a service, faithful to that service. It's a threefold designation here, like you have 30-fold, 60-fold, 100-fold. And so that's how it's laid out there. And then he comes back, okay, where Colossians 3:15 also mentions, and you can run that word called quite a few places, and that's one of them where you really got to take a lot of time if you want to get the complete meaning for it. Colossians 3:15. This one says, and let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to the which also ye are called into one body, and be thankful. Okay, that's in the New Testament where we're called into being a body of Christ at the moment of salvation. So he comes back to that idea in verse 19. Circumcision is nothing, and uncircumcision is nothing. Okay, some of these folks that are running these Jewish holidays, Sabbath, whatnot, you know why they're doing it? In most cases, is they think they're more spiritual than somebody else. That's, in most cases, is the intent. I'm more spiritual than you are. But this says circumcision is nothing, uncircumcision is nothing. It don't mean anything. What's the meaning? What's the important part? But the keeping of the commandments of God. Okay, that's the important part. And then he says, let every man abide in the same calling wherein he was called. Now he jumps into the employment idea or master-servant idea. He says, art thou called being a servant? Care not for it. Not a big deal. Don't worry about it. Okay? And then he says, but if thou mayest be free, use it rather. So if you can get your freedom, get it. For he that is called in the Lord, being a servant, is the Lord's free man. Likewise also he that is called being free is Christ's servant. Ye are bought with a price, be not ye the servants of men. Okay, a lot said there. Now he's thrown in a Roman idea as far as Roman law. Roman law, if you study governing structures and Roman history, Roman law is very similar to what we have right now. Except that they had a Caesar, okay, where we have a president, but it's a different situation. Rendering a Caesar the things that are Caesar, okay, so that's dealing with jurisdiction. Okay, so what is in Caesar's jurisdiction, and if you go into Caesar's jurisdiction, then you've got to comply with Caesar. Okay, if you don't want to comply with Caesar, don't get in his game. Stay out of his game. Now, in our culture, okay, we have a mistaken idea that we think the president is the highest authority, and then federal government's the next. Okay, then state governments, then county, and then you and I are all way at the bottom. But that's not the truth. That's not true at all. Okay, in reality, if you go back to 1776, July 5th, 1776, who was the highest human authority? There was no president, there was no Congress, there's no Senate, there's no county governments really per se. Who were the highest, who was equal to King George on July 5th, 1776? Was every law-abiding citizen, person, following the common law. They call them the free man living on the land. Okay, where that's how America began. A man living on his land. He's a king on his own castle. Okay, and that's what happened. And the reason why it wasn't a revolution per se. It's called a revolution in history, but technically it wasn't. I came across a book, actually it's published by Bob Jones University years ago, and they talk about the myth of the American Revolution. So I did a research on that, and I thought that was very intriguing. What confused me was, if you read the history of the church in the early 1700s, in the mid-1750s, a revival started. It started brewing in the colonies. I mean, big-time revival. I mean, people coming in, circuit-riding preachers, and entire communities getting saved. Okay, and it was mainly, it was Baptist and Presbyterian, Congregationalist to a point. Methodists had not really been around yet till the 1850s or mid-1800s. And they had a great revival. And I thought, how could believing Christians rebel against established authority and still be right having these revivals? Well, when I discovered this idea about the myth of the American Revolution, it made perfect sense. And what happened is, the colonists kept appealing to Parliament and King George, please, please, back off some of these taxes. We want to be loyal subjects. We want to do that. That's our intent. But please, we can't handle this taxation, so we're asking you to back off the taxes. And finally, King George got so fed up with it, and there were some in Parliament saying, yeah, it's right, we got to back off. Well, King George signed a decree. It's called a Prohibitory Act. It came in force January 1, 1776, and they didn't have emails, didn't have quick understanding of these things. And by the time documents got here and some of the people like John Adams and some of the instrumental people that helped start a country read that document, they didn't understand it. John Adams wrote a letter in the late of February of that year, and he said, King George has thrown us off. We are out from under his protection. What do we do? We are no longer under his protection. We are no longer subjects of King George because he threw us off. He hired German mercenaries to attack us. What do we do? 90% of the colonists, or a very large proportion of them, had Blackstone's commentaries in their homes. And that, Sir William Blackstone wrote four commentaries on the common law. And so they understood that. And in those commentaries, when a king throws off a people, they are no longer subjects. So that was late February when John Adams wrote this letter to somebody. Well, by the time these men got together was in May. What do we do? What do we do? And they appealed to France to help protect them, but you know how that turned out. Okay, and they realized we have to make a public declaration of independence because the king has thrown us off. And that's why they signed it on July 4th. That made them a complete new nation. They weren't rebelling because they were trying to be loyal subjects. He threw them off. They were forced to declare independence. And then when he started sending the troops over, that was nothing but self-defense. Because those people had discussed many, many times, what is a just war? What is a just war? What is a just cause for a bunch of people to go attack or get in a battle or a fight or war? And they concluded the just war, the only just war, is a defensive war. And that's why our military is called the Department of Defense. That's a just war, self-defense. And that's what they did. They defended themselves and militia and the Minutemen. And the guns and the ammunition were stored at the churches. King George was so upset, he called it a Presbyterian rebellion. Because it was Presbyterian pastors and Baptist pastors that were the ones that were advising or being chaplains to the Minutemen, the militia. Okay, and so when they finally, about 1783 or so, finally King George and them gave up. And that's when he said every single person is American, is a citizen equal to King George. Okay, and he was forced to recognize that. But anybody who has your liberties that goes out into the woods and you're all by yourself and want to enjoy yourself, obviously you're never going to have a bug, a tick, a flea, a fly, a mosquito going to bother you. And that's where politics comes in play. And so politicians spend their time of trying to get us to voluntarily give up our liberties. And they're very good at it. Okay, they're very, very good at it. And they know how to get people to give up their liberties. And that's what's happened in our country. Now, a lot of people think that they're a free man. They're not. Okay? And that's what's happening in our country. And so, if a person has relative freedom, use it for God's glory. Okay? If they take that away from us, so what? Okay? We can still glorify God, however he puts us. When Paul was standing in front of King Agrippa, and he had these chains on him, Paul had more freedom in Christ than Agrippa did. Agrippa was bound by public, what people viewed about him publicly. He was bound by that. Bob Jones Sr. used to say, and I don't remember if I get the exact quote, but the more a person gets notoriety from like media, things like that, more attention, the more he is controlled. And that's, public opinion is promoted through the news industry. And they can ruin a person for no good reason. For none whatsoever. Okay, and so, now Paul himself, he was freeborn. He says that. Okay, and if you look at Paul's life, when he in Acts 16 and Acts 20, he had two encounters with public officials. And the first time he just kind of went along with it. And then he mentioned he was a Roman citizen. And boy, did they jump. They were afraid. And then the next time he decided, this time around, I don't want to get a beating. So this time he threw the citizenship idea, the Roman citizenship, before he got the beating. Okay, but the other time he got the beating and then he threw it out there, and boy, they were afraid because they could have been charged with assault, they could have been charged with kidnapping. Okay, and he knew the law well. He was freeborn. So Paul used his freedom for God's glory, and we should use the freedoms we have for God's glory. Okay, and if freedoms are lost and freedoms are continually being eroded away from us continually, okay, and we just watch it. Yeah, you protest. Yes, you try to do all you can. But it's going to happen because it's all part of the New World Order where God and the devil both are setting up a wonderful chess match. Now, God's going to win, but he's going to make it look like he's going to let the devil have almost checkmate with the Antichrist. And then the Lord plays one move and boom, he's out. So they're working together on this thing. And so we just watch the program go. But I like what he says in verse 21. He says, care not for it. Care not for it. Okay? Don't get all bundled up about it. And I'll use an illustration. The Lord played a dirty trick on me years ago. When I first started reading all this stuff, black helicopters, UN, all this stuff, I was reading it. At the same time, I got audited by the IRS a couple years running in a row, caught them in a big ball face lie and all this stuff. It was just one thing mess after another. On a Saturday night, about midnight, a helicopter is flying over our house with a searchlight. I looked in front of the house. There's a sheriff's car right in front of our house. And I came back in the bedroom. I said to my wife, it's happening quicker than I thought. Where's the guns? Okay, and so that went on for about 15 minutes, and we're all nervous and all that stuff, obviously, waiting for them to break in the house. And then all of a sudden, everything just died away. 2 hours later, here comes the helicopter again. Searchlight over our backyard, over our air, just flying around. Another 15 minutes, you know, wakes us up. We're all nervous again and goes away. Next morning, we go to church, and some folks have got scanners. You know, some of these folks, these country folks, they run these scanners, want to see what the cops are doing all the time. Three of them had scanners. One said there was a shootout down at the cemetery. One said there's a kidnapping down at the cemetery. And one said there, I forget what the other one was. Well, Wednesday, the truth came out. And the truth was that a rookie cop, town cop, a rookie town cop was getting transferred. He didn't want to get transferred. He took his own 9mm, shot his own car twice, called in and said somebody shot at him, and they thought they were chasing after drugs, two couple of drug guys, couple of kidnappers down our street. And when I discovered that, the Lord said, relax, relax. I'm in control. Now, that was kind of a dirty trick, but it sure did get my attention. Okay, and so, yeah, we study these things, we study conspiracy, we try to keep the freedoms we have. Why? So I can be comfortable or so I can serve God without distraction. But what if God allows these distractions? Okay, what if, like, the distractions, you know, Heidi would love to serve God without distractions, but she's got a constant pest, a messenger of Satan, that's constantly distracting it, okay? And it ain't going to let up unless the Lord intervenes, and they got to go to court again, okay? And but yet the Lord is watching this. And, you know, if we stay faithful through the distractions, guess what? We get different rewards, okay? If you offer somebody a gospel tract and they get saved, that's one reward. Praise the Lord. If you offer them a gospel tract and they reject it and they get mad and yell and scream at you and all that stuff, well, you get a different reward. You don't lose on that. It's just a different reward. So he says in verse 21, okay, mayest be free, use it rather. Okay, if you're being a servant, okay, fine. Now, servant in the Bible is very similar to our word employee. They're very similar. Okay. Slave would be something different. The Bible uses the word slave twice. In one time, you have servant and slave in the same verse. So there are some similarities. The Bible regulates the master-slave relationship. It regulates it. And people are always going to yell at the South for what they did. The North was just as hypocritical about that war than anybody. In fact, they were more hypocritical because they were making a bunch of money off of that. Okay, and that whole war really wasn't about the slave issue. You can go down to Haiti, and those Haitians, a lot of those Haitians were sent there by Abe Lincoln because he wanted to push them down to Haiti. He cared nothing for them. And in fact, Abe Lincoln came out and said that the white man and the black man are not equal and they should never be in the same governing structure. People don't tell, they don't know the truth about Abe Lincoln. Okay, and there's a guy who wrote a book, The Real Lincoln. Another guy, more of contemporary, wrote another book entitled the same thing, The Real Lincoln. Okay, and so that was the slavery issue was a smokescreen. Where the South was wrong was they were supposed to free a man after 7 years. Okay, that's what they were supposed to do, free a man after 7 years. Out freely, you know, and send him with some things and whatnot. If he wanted to stay in a situation, which a lot of them wanted to, then that's where they came up with the Bible has the earring thing. Where the North was wrong is they used that to deceive our country. And there was a black man, I think his name was Cain, after the war, he said after all the smokescreen took place, everybody became a slave. And they did that by deception. Okay, that's where we're at today. Okay, and Jesus said to the Pharisees, he said to them in John 8 that they were servants, and they said, we've never been a servant to any man. They were right at that time. The most deceived people in the world are people who think they're free when they're slaves. Okay, this is the, like, Woodstock of the 60s. Free sex they talked about. They were slaves. They were slaves towards that. And if they didn't think they were, when they got the diseases, they discovered they became slaves. Okay, and so the Lord wants us to use our freedom for His benefit, and if we don't have that, we use that for His benefit, and we do what we can. Whatever situation we're in, we just do it to walk with the Lord. So verse 23 says, ye are bought with a price. He covered that at the end of chapter 6 about that we are bought at Calvary. Be not ye the servants of men. Okay? To the best of your ability, try not to be. Okay? But there are times that the servant of all is greatest of all. So then he says, brethren, let every man wherein he is called, therein abide with God. Okay, so either way you go. Now he's jumping back into the marriage situation. Now he's going to jump back into the idea of getting remarried. Now concerning virgins, I have no commandment of the Lord, yet I give my judgment. So this is from his personal experience. Now this is a single man. There's no record of him getting married. So he says, I give my judgment as one that hath obtained mercy of the Lord to be faithful. The mercy that he's obtained from the Lord is he's disciplined himself not to desire to fulfill those natural desires. I suppose, therefore, that this is good for the present distress. Struggles in that church. I say that it's good for man so to be. Okay, question. Art thou bound unto a wife? Okay, you can see how the word bound is being used, bound as in marriage. Art thou bound unto a wife? Seek not to be loosed. Don't look for a divorce. Okay? But don't be a hypocrite about somebody who's gone through a divorce because you don't know what the situation is. So, he's given priorities. Okay, remember his priority so far is stay single. If you can't contain, get married. You're married, don't look for a divorce. If a divorce takes place, go back to the number one, stay single. But if you can't contain, get married. Okay, what's the goal? Verse 15, the goal is peace. Peace within that home. Then he says, art thou loose from a wife? Seek not a wife. Okay, so if you're not married, if you're loose from a wife, meaning you were married and you are not married, seek not a wife. But, and if thou marry, thou hast not sinned. Put that on the Pharisees. Oh boy, do they jump all, they ignore that. Thou hast not sinned. And if a virgin marry, she hath not sinned. So we see there are two different parties here. And neither one, when they get married, are sinning. But then he throws this idea. Nevertheless, such shall have trouble in the flesh, but I spare you. Okay, and so, okay, I mean, you're going to have trouble, two parties, two different families, maybe two different cultures. Man, yeah, you're going to have adjustments. Yes, you're going to have some struggles. But then when there's a marriage and a divorce and then a remarriage and say there's children, obviously you're going to have trouble. You're going to have to child custody and back and forth, and you're going to have all these different things going on. And that's what he's talking about in verse 28. Okay, you got the trouble. That's the way it's going to be. You got the trouble. And then it says this, but this I say, brethren, the time is short. It remaineth that both they that have wives be as though they had none. So he's ready to go. He's thinking rapture is going to take place. And they that weep as though they wept not. And they that rejoice as though they rejoiced not. And they that buy as though they possessed not. And they that use this world as not abusing it, for the fashion of this world passes away. So there's a common saying. Or an archaic word, I guess you could say. Archaic words. King James is so out of date. What do they call them? Fashions. Fashions. Oh, what's in fashion now? I remember in the late 1960s, they still had the thin ties. My grandpa, the thicker ties, the bigger ties were coming in. Dad's dad, my grandpa, said, I kept this from the last time it was in. And that, how does Hollywood work? Okay, the fashions. They wait till everybody's got their closets filled with the fashions. They're going to change them. Why? So now you got to have a garage sale, go out and spend all your money to keep up with the fashion. That's the intent. What you do is you learn what are classics and dress in the classics. Okay? And don't worry about the fads and the fashions. Why? Because a bunch of perverts out there in Hollywood that's just trying to pervert us, keep us poor, keep us enslaved to them. Okay? When I was in high school, any guy that had an earring, we said, you must be queer. Well, today, man, they got the whole tackle box on their face. And that's not strange? Wow. That's weird. The fashions of this world, what does it do? They pass away. Here today, gone tomorrow. And then in verse 30, he says, but I would have you without carefulness. Now, Paul, this idea, it is a serious idea, especially if somebody's in the middle of the trouble. But if you're not in the middle of the trouble, no, don't stick your nose in the air. Make this a number one doctrine of your church. And you're all making sure everybody's fitting my little mold. I mean, he says, don't be full of care about this. Jeremy Wilson, a friend of ours down in Louisiana, Mississippi. I met Jeremy when he was 18. We took chalk art class together through the Gothard Ministry. It was the first chalk art class they had. Jeremy was a New King James, John MacArthur fan, Southern Baptist, just graduated from Southern Baptist, just graduated from high school, wanting to be a pastor, thinking about going to some school, and so he and I was in this 10-day class together, and we actually roomed together. There's three teenagers and this old guy, okay, and I was the only old guy in the class, and Jeremy's started asking me questions. And I'll be honest with you, I wasn't going to answer the questions. I didn't want to answer a bunch of his questions because his dad wasn't here. I didn't feel it was really appropriate to, even though he's 18, I just felt it would be better to answer his questions in front of his dad so his dad could either counter the ideas or whatnot. And so I was pretty generic in the first few questions he asked me, just pretty general about things. And then, Jeremy wouldn't leave me alone. Boom. Question. So I started laying it out for him. And he was all ears. He was he was prime. He was ready. He was an apple ready to be picked right off the tree. I mean, just as ready to go as you could be. It's like God had been preparing him for this divine appointment with this ding-a-ling. And I hear him on the phone talking to his dad. He said, Dad, when we get home, we got to get new Bibles. And I said, oh, no, here we go. Here we go again. And so Dale and Susan and the whole Wilson family and Summer and Aaron, all of them followed Jeremy's lead and changed. Unbelievable. They were part of a Southern Baptist church, and I figured how long they're going to stick around there. It depends how much study Jeremy puts into it. And then he asked me, he said, what school would you recommend to go to? And I said, I don't recommend any school. You don't? I said, no. I said, what would you suggest for me to do? I said, stay home under your dad's authority. And I'll send you some tapes so you can start listening. And so I started sending him some tapes. And boy, did he eat it up. We were on the phone, calling and asking questions, one thing after another. They left a Southern Baptist church, and they went to this church that was kind of a Gothard church where they were pretty big on Bill Gothard, which is a good thing. But they had a general rule in their church that if you're married and divorced, if you're divorced, you can't get remarried. And if you've been divorced and you've been remarried, you can't do anything in this church. I figured that's how it was. And it was a step up from the Southern Baptists, and I figured they'd stick around there for a little while, and they did, and then they went someplace else. But funny thing, Jeremy and his dad was down at the courthouse. And I don't know how they came across it, but they looked up one of the man's names in the church who was a very instrumental man in the church, very big leader in the church, And they discover that he was divorced and remarried. How did he keep that secret? Now, they didn't rat him out. They didn't go and tell anybody. But how do you know what goes on in people's past? You know, that's the same amazing thing. You know, that church, the pastor has gone through a terrible trial in his life. I just can't imagine the pain this man's gone through. But his daughter married a homeschool kid. They went through the whole courtship idea, wonderful relation, oh, happy marriage, everybody's happy. Less than 1 year, that homeschool kid came behind his wife, who was with child, took a gun and boom, went to work, and then came back home as the police show up, and now the kid's in jail. Homeschool kid. Both homeschooled people, raised and sheltered in good homes, good families and everything. And that's what happens. You don't know what goes on in people's hearts. Not a clue. Kids in jail forever now. Dad spent every dime he could to try to help the kid out, and now the family's got nothing. Isn't that sad? But that's what goes on. Okay, and it's amazing thing. These things are very serious. So in verse 32, he says, I would have you without carefulness. He that is unmarried careth for the things that belong to the Lord, how he may please the Lord. Why? No distractions. But he that is married careth for the things that are of the world, how he may please his wife. So that's what a man should do. Does that mean he has to jump when she says jump every time? No, he tries to do what he can to be a blessing to her spiritually, emotionally, physically, financially. He does what he can. He doesn't rip her family apart no matter how bad they are. Sure, we joke about mother-in-laws. We joke about in-law jokes. But we allow, that was her family. She should be able to attend to her family without distraction, you do all you can, and you try to be a blessing to them. I mean, that's her family. Maybe they're in jail, maybe they're lost. Now, my wife's family is, you know, saved people and everything. They thought I was a little dingy at times, quite a few times, most of the time. But, I mean, that's their family. And so you want to do all you can to try to help. Now, if that family is trying to rip your family apart, now you got a little different situation you got to deal with. So you do what you can. He does what he can to try to be a blessing to her. Find out her love language. Okay, where some people's way of feeling love is time talking. Some is you do something for her. My wife is do something for her. Like trying to clean the house. I don't make the bed, but, you know, try to clean the house maybe. Stuff like that. She likes that. Okay? And so find out what makes them happy or pleases them. Then it says, verse 34, there is a difference also between a wife and a virgin. Obviously, we have two different parties here. The unmarried woman careth for the things of the Lord. Okay? Unmarried, meaning either a virgin or was married and is not married anymore. Care for the things of the Lord that she may be holy, both in body and in spirit. But she that is married, care for the things of the world, how she may please her husband. Okay, so she does what she can. She don't push his buttons. That's what some couples, they know what buttons to push to get a reaction. Is that not true how people are? Boy, I get this button. Watch this one. No, we don't do that. We stay away from the button. We do what we can to be a blessing to each other. Okay, so that's 34, 35. We'll try to finish this up. And this I speak for your own profit, not that I may cast a snare upon you, but for that which is comely, that ye may attend upon the Lord without distraction. Okay, so that's highest ideal, but sometimes that's not going to happen. But if any man think that he behaveth himself uncomely toward his virgin, if she passed a flower of her age, see how the Bible writes this, flower, go back to Leviticus, you discover what that's talking about, and need so require, let him do what he will, he sinneth not, let them marry. No sin. Nevertheless, he that standeth steadfast in his heart, having no necessity, but hath power over his own will, so he's got willpower, he's going to, like Paul, he's been given grace, and hath so decreed in his heart that he will keep his virgin, doeth well. So then, he that giveth her in marriage doeth well, but he that giveth her not in marriage doeth better. So it's just a matter of priority. The wife is bound by the law as long as her husband liveth. That one you got to run back to Romans 7 and you discover what he's talking about there. But if her husband be dead, she is at liberty to be married to whom she will. But then, P.S., only in the Lord. Now, in this day and age, I would say only in the Lord, and also a Bible believer in some fashion. I mean, you're going to get a Pentecostal and a Bible believer together, you're going to have, might as well marry an unsaved person. I mean, in Pentecostal women that get going in tongues, they are so infested sometimes. And, ooh, doggy. You want to see fireworks, I mean, just get involved with that. No, you want to have as much agreement as you possibly have. And the saying goes that before you get married, have both eyes wide open. When you get married, close one eye. Okay, and so the thing is talk back and forth. I believe this, I believe that, I believe this, okay, I believe this. But then, you know, some people lie. They put on a good show. So in verse 39, only in the Lord. But she is happier if she so abide. I think I was watching Curly. Yeah, it's Curly. Very wisdom in Curly. He said, are you married or are you happy? I thought, faintly. That's Curly. But she is happier if she so abide after my judgment. See, after his experience. And so I think also that I have the Spirit of the Lord. Look, I think also I have. Paul, you mean you're not speaking by the inspiration of the Holy Ghost? I thought you were supposed to know that. A lot of those guys didn't know that. You know, they'd say, well, Jeremiah didn't say he's speaking by the Holy, he's speaking under inspiration. Neither did Isaiah, neither did Daniel, neither did Ezekiel. So I mentioned twice in the Bible. What's the big deal? Well, I think also that I have the Spirit of God. Well, he did. Found out later he did, and the Lord put it in the Bible. Okay, so that's chapter 7. We got it covered. Right at 7. Good job. Okay, any questions or comments?